Well, Mark Van Evry, I want to thank you so much for your time. Thanks for stopping by the studio today. I know you're very busy here and starting off your stint as the new forest supervisor at the Black Hills National Forest. Thanks for joining us.
You bet, Charles. Thanks.
And how has this first period been as you're getting into the new job? How's it going?
Well, I think it's going well. It's a very busy forest. There's a lot of things going on, and so I'm beginning to learn about those, beginning to meet a lot of people that have a keen interest in what happens on the Black Hills National Forest and start establishing those relationships, and certainly spent time getting to know the employees that help manage the area as well.
And you've got a big job managing the Black Hills National Forest. What's your top priority? What are the things you see as most important?
Well, it is a big job, and thankfully I don't have to do it alone. I've got a great staff of people that work for the Forest Service, and we work a lot with a lot of different other organizations, other agencies, and other partners. So we do it together. But as far as top priorities, I'm still trying to, you know, get a good handle on what all the issues are. There's no question that continuing to work on the long-term process of addressing the pine bark beetle epidemic here on the forest is going to continue to be a high priority. Fire and fuels and making sure that we're protecting life and property and as well as the resources is going to be important. And our recreation program. People come from all over the country and all over the world to see this beautiful area, and we want to continue to provide safe, well-maintained facilities for them to be able to use and enjoy.
It seems the Forest Service has many of the same goals and many of the same challenges in national forest lands across the Mountain West. But I want to ask about the pine beetle epidemic in particular in the Black
Sure.
Hills. What do you see as what it's going to take to manage this at this point in time? Do you see any changes in the management plans for the future?
Well, you know, it's a natural phenomenon. It's something that occurs naturally. But as it begins to grow, when the population grows like it has here, because it's got lots of food to eat, lots of trees that are susceptible to the bark beetle, then we get the large impacts that we've had here. We're starting to see those impacts go down as the available food supply is reduced, as well as the beetle population is starting to decline as well. So I think we're, and hopefully folks are seeing that there's a lot fewer red trees on the landscape than there were a few years ago, and we're hopeful that that's on the trajectory we'd like to see. So as that declines, then our next step is to look at how do we manage the forest going forward in the future with what we still have available. And how do we set up situations and a strategy that reduces the likelihood of a very large beetle infestation in the future? But also, how do we provide wildlife habitat? How do we provide recreation settings for people? How do we reduce the fire danger? And all of those things work hand in hand and have worked hand in hand to create what we see on the landscape today. We have a lot more younger trees, and we'll have more as they continue to seed in those areas that have been opened up through the treatments. We have a lot of more mid-aged trees, kind of like me, that aren't quite as large as some of the ones that were more susceptible to beetle attack. And so how do we manage that, and how do we manage so we have a variety of ages and sizes across the landscape? So when something like this happens in the future, it doesn't have a large area to infest and create the impacts that it did.
I've heard the words thrown around resiliency, mm-hmm. managing for resiliency, trying to make a forest that is resilient to these kind of changes,
sure.
trying to make a forest that can adapt to these kind of changes. Is that part of it?
It very much is, yeah. If you have a landscape that's not all one thing, you know, you talk about agricultural crops, you don't want a monoculture because if something comes in, be it an insect or some other kind of disease, it can wipe out everything. Well, it's the same thing in a forest. If everything's the same species, the same age, it's going to be more susceptible to those kinds of natural events, whether it's beetles or fire. And by having a mix of ages, a mix of species, a mix of different habitat types, it's beneficial from that standpoint. It's beneficial from a wildlife standpoint. And I think it's more enjoyable from a recreational and scenic standpoint as well.
Now, top Forest Service leaders have testified before Congress that climate change is playing a role in management of the forests in the United States, including increasing the length of the fire season and helping exacerbate some of the mountain pine beetle outbreaks that are happening across the Mountain West. How does climate change play a role in your management decisions as you look forward into the future? How do you incorporate this?
Well, you know, I think it goes back to the question you just asked about resiliency. If you're managing a forest in such a way that it can respond to those kinds of natural events, whatever they might be, whether it's a drought, it's a flood, it's a fire, it's insects and disease, by having a diverse landscape, diverse vegetation, it's much more resilient, much more able to adapt and not have a major impact across the entire landscape.
Part of all this management includes being able to be a good neighbor and manage Black mm-hmm. Hills with people who live in the forest. And I've heard that, correct me if I'm wrong, the Black Hills is one of the most densely populated national forests in the country, and that there's a lot of private land within the Black Hills National Forest. What does it take to be a good neighbor to these private landowners, and what does it take to work in this kind of a national forest system where you have a lot of neighbors?
Right. Well, certainly there's a lot of interspersed ownership within this forest, as there is in many other national forests. And a couple of things. One, we need to make sure we're taking care of the lands that we're responsible for in the national forest in such a way that it doesn't increase the risk to those property owners adjacent to us. And likewise, we want to work with those property owners to help them do things that can help themselves. And fire and fuels management is a really important one. Is how they manage their lands determines how susceptible they are to fire and how successful we can be in helping to protect them when we do get a wildfire type of situation. So that's a real important one. As far as the bark beetle, there's been a lot of cooperation and coordination with other landowners, and that's really important because the beetles don't understand that line when they get to it. They cross over it just like a fire does. And so continuing to talk with people, we're certainly open to discussing things with landowners and working with them on what we can do to help them and what they can do to help themselves.
One thing we've seen in recent years also is the implementation of a travel management plan in the Black Hills. It has basically laid out a series and systems of back roads and four-wheel drive trails and ATV trails where people mm-hmm. can go. How is this system going? Any changes you see in that overall?
Well, it's a great system, and it's something that's obviously very popular with a lot of people, a wonderful way for people to get out and use the forest and recreate. But it also has some challenges associated with it, and we have to ensure that we're doing it in a way that's sustainable, both ecologically as well as socially and economically. And so we do have a fee structure. We charge a fee for use of those trails, and that helps us manage that. It helps us ensure that as things get impacted, any road that you drive on, whether it's with an ATV, a UTV, or a car, especially if it's not a hard surface road, eventually is going to deteriorate and has to be maintained. And so we have things that we need to be doing related to that. We're discovering as the use increases on some of those, where some of those areas are that need some attention and some work to try to reduce those impacts, or perhaps in some cases even redesign them so they're less susceptible to that. We also need to make sure that people are following the rules and not driving places where they're not supposed to be, that are not open. And so our education, law enforcement, other things are an important part of that. But for the most part, people are pretty compliant, follow the rules, and are out there just enjoying the national forest. And so we're going to continue to monitor that. From my perspective, when we start talking about trails, whether they're motorized or non-motorized, we have to, again, look at sustainability. And it's, again, looking at can the resources handle the use, the type of use? Is the trail designed in such a way that it's not creating an environmental problem like an erosion problem or other kinds of things? And can we maintain that over the long term? So we need to take care of what we have, and as we begin to look at new opportunities, make sure that we can take care of what we have before we add more.
Thank you. And I want to switch gears here, too, and ask, we've mentioned, you know, fire is one of the things you have to manage in the Black mm-hmm. Hills. I also understand that firefighting is taking up a bigger and bigger chunk of the Forest Service budget over the last decade.
That's correct.
What kind of challenge does this pose for someone in your position?
Well, you know, first of all, as you mentioned, we have not only this forest, but lots of national forests where there's more and more development that's occurring in and around the national forest. That creates new challenges from a firefighting standpoint. When we do get a fire, we have to try to stop it before it gets to someone's home or private land and other resources. And so the flexibility to manage fire is different. And the need to try to protect people and property is different. that increases the amount of costs involved in the firefighting effort. What in the past we might have been able to go to a road that didn't involve anybody's home and allow the fire to back down to that road, now we have to move in closer to try to stop that fire in areas where there is development. The second piece is, from a budgetary standpoint, all those things cost money. And because the Forest Service does not have a special program specifically for fire like FEMA does for natural disasters, those costs, although Congress does fund us for firefighting effort, in the years where we have lots of fires, we frequently will exceed that available allocation that comes at the beginning of the year, and then we have to start looking at using other funds. And so the impact is it impacts our work in other resource areas. There's less money available for our recreation programs. There's less money available for wildlife or for timber management and other things. And so it forces us to focus more of our resources, more of our personnel on the firefighting effort. And as you probably know, there's proposals that are being considered in Congress to allow at least the largest fires, top 10%, I believe it is, of the largest fires, which are typically the most costly, to be funded through a special fund similar to what we do for things like tornadoes and hurricanes. And if that is approved by Congress, that would definitely help the situation.
You mentioned the word sustainability. We've talked a little bit about resiliency and adaptation. What does it take in the long term to manage for fire, and how do we create that kind of sustainable forest? And are these things all related in a way? Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when you have a forest that is, again, all the same age, especially as the forests get older, if you have a lot of trees that start to come down, you have a dense undergrowth in the understory, which thankfully is not the case most places here in the Black Hills, it becomes more susceptible to fire, and it's more difficult to manage that fire once it starts to be able to control it. By doing a lot of the things we've been doing here with the bark beetle, by thinning the forest, keeping the understory open, by doing whole tree logging and not leaving a lot of slash on the ground that can catch fire, it allows us to be much more successful in being able to control a fire once it starts. Obviously, preventing fires that are human caused is an important part of that. And then we also use prescribed fire in some cases. In fact, hopefully today we're going to be doing about a 200 to 300 acre prescribed fire down on the Hell Canyon District. And that's all part of managing that natural environment. As most people who live in this area, historically there was wildfire that came through this area and burned through the Black Hills. And there wasn't people around that were affected by it other than the Native Americans that benefited from some of the wildlife habitat improvement and things that occurred from that. So all of those are important tools, and I think it's the mix of all of those that's going to help us. And we found that when fires do start and they hit the areas that have been managed in one way or another, it helps the fire activity and intensity to lower, and it makes us able to be much more successful and more safely be able to attack that fire and keep it where we want to keep it out of.
If I recall, one of the mottos of the Forest Service in past years has been the idea of multiple use, that you manage for many users across, and you try and manage for a lot of different people, a lot of different things that can be done on our national forest. This got to be a tough job in a way. Why do you do this? What keeps you waking up in the morning, and what's your drive behind all this?
Well, you know, I think I do it for the same reason a lot of people like to be able to come to a national forest. It's because I get to live and work in the places that people have really fond memories of and that they have a lot of attachment to. And I get to have the privilege and the honor of being able to help manage that area along with the rest of the employees on the forest. And being able to keep something for my children and my grandchildren and everybody else's children and grandchildren, be able to enjoy into the future and hopefully leave it in better shape than I started having the opportunity to be responsible for the management.
Mark Van Avery, Supervisor for the Black Hills National Forest, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yep, thank you, Charles. Appreciate it.